This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Lend Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And we'll take a look at the Horseman's Clinic. That's coming up in the first Saturday of February. That's 2 weeks away, not this one, but the following one, right here on the U of I campus at the Vet Med building. If you're a horse owner, probably something you should pre-register for. Listen up for that. And we'll talk today a little bit about the cash grain segment as well with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, all on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they closed out in Chicago for this Monday afternoon. Nearby contract for the March corn at 369 and three quarters, down a half. The May unchanged at 374 and three quarters, and July at 380, up a quarter of a cent. December of next year, 392 and a half higher. Soy complex now, March beans, up 4 cents at the end of the day, $8.80 and a half cents. The final trade, May futures at 881 and three quarters. Quarters up 4.5 in July, $8.86 and three quarters, 4 3/4 higher. November beans, $8.89 and three quarters, up 6. Bean meal, $4 higher, $2.72.50. The bean oil, 6 cents lower, at $30.44. Soft red winter wheat, the March contract up 6 cents, $4.81.5. July at $4.92 1/4, up 7. July hard red at $4.94 3/4, up 4 cents for the afternoon. Live cattle futures currently trading 82.5 cents. Lower at $131.25 in the February, the April $1.05 lower at $132.25, and feeder cattle for the day in the January at $160.17.5, up 75 cents. The March at $157.55 are down 35 cents. Lean hogs on the day, February contract $63.47 per 100 pounds, up 47.5 cents. April at $68.80, down 20 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There, check out our calendar of events, things that we'll be doing out and about in the public as we go through the winter meeting season. Again, that's over on the right-hand side of the page. Could be the bottom of the page if you're on a smartphone or you happen to have your website closed up tight, but it's all at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Here's what some of the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil is trading $30.28 a barrel now. It's down $1.91. Ethanol futures at $1.40 are 7/10 of a cent higher. The price of a gallon of gasoline on the RBOB, that's the wholesale price, is $1.02 9/10 of a cent, down 5 4/10 of a cent. And diesel fuel is 6 2/10 of a cent lower at 93 3/10 of a cent. Natural gas at $2.15 9/10 of a cent per gallon is up 2 cents. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at this hour is 94 points lower at 15,908. And the dollar index at 99.41. That's down 0.241 for the afternoon. Gold futures at $1,105.50 are up $9.25 per troy ounce. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. A 50% chance of rainfall after 2 o'clock this afternoon, so that's right now. Cloudy, high of 43, south winds at 16 to 18. Tonight, a 40% chance of rainfall before midnight. Cloudy and a low of 31. It'll be breezy out there, 18 to 21 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 29. And then tomorrow during the day, cloudy skies, a high of 34 degrees on a west wind at 14 to 17. It'll gust to 25. And on Tuesday evening, mostly cloudy, a low of 21. Wednesday, sunny and 33. Thursday, partly sunny and 38. And Friday, partly sunny and 41 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. We'll talk with the folks at Risk Pulse.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
This is the Closing Market Report. It is the 25th day of January, 2016. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Monday afternoon, as usual, Kurt Kimmel is here from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to take a look at what happened at the trade in Chicago. Thanks, Kurt, for being with us this afternoon. Tell me about your view of what took place today.
Well, more of the same. We've got some positive news. We have some negative news, but when you look at the price chart, we're really not moving anywhere. As a whole, the market's holding there fairly well with deflationary fears, fears of lower outside market activity. Seems we've got some producers selling above the market, but yet we still have some fairly good, decent demand under the market. This trend's probably going to continue until we get into February and start getting some numbers on expectations for numbers of acres and how they're going to be divided up going into the spring, and then of course weather of all things. Today, wheat gets the star. Talk of maybe Russia limiting some exports. But the thing with the wheat market in general is we've lost a big percentage share of the world export market, and it's going to take some Egyptian wheat market business to come back here to the U.S. to really get the market excited about following through to the upside here, especially in the U.S. So more of a hurry up and wait type of attitude right now, kind of waiting for the next bit of news here to break out this trading range we've been in for the last 6 to 8 months.
What are we watching for that might do that? Are we worried still about South America and its crops yet, or have we started to feel comfortable with the numbers there?
Well, that's known. We'll have to see how fast or how readily available the grain becomes in moving into the export channel, for say. There's all kinds of little hiccups that could come in there to disrupt some of that movement. But for the most part, the numbers are fairly well known, and I think it's more of a weather market. It seems like the trade's waiting for some type of weather news. Producers kind of hoping and wishing that we have a 83 type El Nino, La Nina type of trade where maybe we're too wet, can't get the crop in the spring, and then we're, turn extremely hot in the last part of the growing season. But that's going to happen somewhere else other than here, especially for guys here on the East who had some production problems here this last growing season.
Yeah, so one of the things that the National Weather Service explored last week when it put out its longer range forecast were the 1 month and the 3 month views, and even further out than that. They all showed warmer temperatures, maybe even below average rainfall, I think, for the month of February and maybe for March and April, too. I don't remember quite exactly that way. Also, a warm summer, but equal chances on the rainfall, at least at that point. If we get an early start to the springtime here, what do you think the problems will it present problems first for price for producers, and do producers need to be aware of that?
Well, we're going to watch Texas here in the next 30 days, see how quick the southern half of the U.S. gets their crop in. And the thing is that these spring rallies should generate a little bit of a buying interest as we start to hedge a little bit of weather. When you look at volatility is relatively low. There's not a whole lot of weather premium into the marketplace just due to the overwhelming fundamentals of deflationary fears and ample world supply. So, if we can get some weather concerns going, that would maybe stimulate a little weather premium build into the marketplace, and that would give producers an opportunity to get caught up on old crop sales and get some new crop sales on the books here.
Probably better check in on the livestock side of the thing. Anything new in the cattle market? I know we had a cattle and feed report that came out Friday.
The spread activity. Well, we saw the fats move a little lower in here, just a little soft tone in the cash side. On feed numbers, a little bit more than what we expected. Feeders, mainly just squaring away the January here as we close that out here fairly quickly. Hog-wise, they were the benefit of the spread, seeing some anticipation that the hogs could, you know, hold in there better than the fats here as we move through the last week of January.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Very good. Take care.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Learn a veterinary.
In today's agricultural news, two United States senators have asked the Justice Department to probe whether the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, broke the law in promoting its Waters of the U.S. rule using a taxpayer-funded social media campaign. The senators' request to the Attorney General follows a congressional probe by the GAO, the General Accounting Office, that found the EPA illegally lobbied for WOTUS on social media and illegally spent taxpayer dollars without congressional approval. The issue came up on the Senate floor this past week as the Senate failed to override President Obama's veto of the bill that would have repealed WOTUS. American Farm Bureau's Dale Morris says the report from GAO carries some weight.
When, you know, an official arm of the Congress and the executive branch, this General Accountability Office, kind of goes both ways, that carries the weight. That is a, you know, a nonpartisan or bipartisan agency whose job is to be, you know, sort of the cops on the beat.
Moore says the report should move the issue forward.
And in this particular case, they've put their exclamation point on the fact that they believe that the Environmental Protection Agency violated the law.
Violations of the so-called Anti-Deficiency Act are punishable by a $5,000 fine and up to 2 years in prison, and EPA must submit a report to Congress detailing the violations. But the two senators complain EPA is dismissive of the GAO legal decision, and justice attorneys have mischaracterized GAO's findings as an opinion letter in court filings. Slowing demand for animal feed this season will leave the world with a bigger hoard of grains than previously thought. That according to the International Grains Council. There has been a bumper crop for the last several seasons. And the International Grains Council says there's been an increase of 1.9% or to 455 million metric tons in total for the 2015-16 season for grains, excluding rice. Wheat and corn futures declined, of course, for the third year in 2015. That's because large harvest around the world led to ample supplies of many different grains. The International Grains Council cut its estimate for total grains demand by just under 0.5%. Well, Creighton University's Rural Main Street Index for January fell from December's weak reading, according to the monthly survey of bank CEOs in rural areas of a 10-state region dependent upon agriculture and energy. Overall, the Rural Main Street Index, which ranges between 0 and 100, sank to 34.8 from December's 41.5. Index coordinator Ernie Goss said recent declines are the result of lower agriculture and energy commodity prices. And finally today, although tests in the Indiana avian influenza incident continue to prove negative, much more work must still be completed before this event can be considered over, that according to the Indiana State veterinarian Brett Marsh. He said Friday that we're optimistic with each day that yields more negative flock tests. Weekly testing and monitoring of commercial poultry farms in the 10-kilometer control area will continue for several weeks as Indiana moves through the process to be declared avian flu free. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The annual Horseman's Clinic on the University of Illinois campus is Saturday, February the 6th. And like usual, this year's University of Illinois Horseman's Clinic will be held the first Saturday in February. Crystal Zuloff from U of I's College of Veterinary Medicine says it is a student-run event open to anyone wanting to learn more about horse health care.
The program is a day-long event. We start with breakfast in the morning. We do presentations from about 8 to noon. And then we break for lunch, and they offer demonstrations. The demonstrations change from year to year, but they are a hands-on opportunity to teach you more in-depthly how to properly care for your horses. And then we have a couple more presentations before the day ends.
The speakers throughout the day will also address how to handle common horse emergencies and behavioral problems. This year, the student advisor to the group, veterinarian Scott Austin, says the day has a unique kickoff demonstration.
This year, we're going to start actually with a farrier rather than a veterinarian who's going to talk about horse care. They make the statement, no hoof, no horse, and so that's where we're going to start, as the bottom up.
A farrier is a horseshoer, a blacksmith, and a specialist on caring for the hooves and legs of horses. It's an important part of the horse, and something really important for horse owners to know about, says Scott Austin.
They have to stand full-time on all 4 feet, and if they cannot, that leads to health problems. It actually makes lameness in the other limbs and can end up in horses that do not have a very comfortable existence.
The rest of the day will be filled with presentations on how to properly vent a barn to prevent the spread of disease, what colic is like for a horse, and how to care for older horses, among other items. The University of Illinois Horsemen's Clinic starts at 7 a.m. Saturday, February the 6th, at the Vet Med Building south of the U of I's main campus on Lincoln Avenue, and includes a behind-the-scenes look at the equine section of the University of Illinois Veterinary Teaching Hospital. The demonstrations are limited to 20 people, so pre-registration is suggested. The cost for the day is $50, and that includes the meals. Those wanting to participate in the demonstrations will be charged an additional $15 per session. Look online for the Horseman's Clinic, Illinois, to find the registration page. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Farmers and their bankers can get a jump on just how much income to expect from the Arc County program next fall. I'll have more in a moment on how Nass County yields can be used to anticipate the payments. Well, farm income is down dramatically. It means farmers will be going to bankers for production loans this winter. And those loans will be used to plant next season's crop. The bankers will be looking for every clue they can find to help them make solid lending decisions. One source of income they'll want to calculate comes from the farm programs. However, the Arc County payments won't be figured until the fall. It is possible to estimate these payments by substituting Nass County yields for the FSA computed yields, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnitke.
So 2015 payments, Arc County payments, there's likely to be payments, but it's going to depend on what those yield levels are, those county yields, and FSA calculates those yields, but they won't release those yields until next autumn of 2016. But we can use Nass yields to come up with a pretty good estimate of what those FSA county yields are, and Nass will release its yields in February of this year. So in February, we'll have a pretty good feel for what those Arc County payments are, because we'll have a pretty good idea of what county yields look like.
Nass County yields do vary from the FSA numbers, but not by much. Nass calculates yields by dividing production by harvested acreage. These are both numbers the agency collects via a statistical estimate. FSA uses a different calculation, says Schnitke.
FSA does the same thing when Nass data exists, but it adds to acres RMA failed acres. So FSA yields will always be less than Nass yields.
Again, because FSA adds failed acres into the calculation, the resulting yields are less than the Nass County yield averages. It means the Nass County yields, again, those will be released in February, will provide a conservative estimate of our county payments.
If they use the Nass yield, they'll be most likely underestimating the payment, because usually FSA yields are a bit lower than Nass yields, and it depends on the number of failed acres.
Again, FSA yields are lower than Nass County yields because production is divided by harvested and failed acres, not just the harvested acreage figure used by Nass. There's an Illinois state map of the average county difference on the Farm Doc Daily website. Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Recapping the numbers as they finished in Chicago for the day, corn pit was up about a quarter to a half for the day. Nearby March was actually down a half. It was at 369 and three quarters. Soy complex was 4 to 5 cents higher, with the March at 880 and a half and the November of next year at 889 and three quarters. It was actually up 6. Bean meal up 40 cents, or rather $4, and the bean oil was down 6 cents. Wheat futures were the big gainer for the day. The March contract up 6 in the soft red at 481 and a half. July at 492 and a quarter, up 7 for the day. Live cattle futures currently trading, and they're just settling out. Our programs are just about 10 minutes delayed. So 131.27 and a half, 80 cents lower. Feeder cattle are 82 and a half higher as they close out the day, and lean hogs are up about 47 and a half cents. On the phone line now to take a look at the cash grain market with us from the Andersons right here in Champaign County is Greg Johnson. Good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the marketplace and whether farmers decided today's little bump up in the grains might be something that they could use and what they're actually doing, if anything at all.
Well, we've had 2 weeks in a row higher on the corn charts, so we have gained 20, 25 cents, and that has generated a little, and I emphasize little, farmer selling. Most of them are still wanting higher prices. Maybe they'll get it, maybe they won't, but at least we're starting to head in the right direction. We got past that January 12th report, and we've seen a little bit of positive news here in the last couple of weeks, and so it has translated into a little bit of farmer selling on corn, but not very much, not enough to affect the basis, not enough to weaken the basis. In fact, we've seen basis get a little bit stronger over the last week or so.
And what have they been asking you most often when they do call?
What's it going to take for the price to work substantially higher, more than just a dime or so? And unfortunately, we've got such an abundant surplus of old crop corn, even though the farmers aren't selling it, the traders know that that's hanging over the market. So the farmers want $4, and so far the traders don't seem to be wanting to pay $4. So we kind of run out of steam in that 370, 375 area, and it's probably going to take weather problems. And if somebody wants to hold on that long, you know, it's probably going to take another 4 or 5 months before we really see if we can, take out that $4 level.
If your purchases there finally caught up to where you think you should be on a percentage basis, or are farmers still larger holders than usual?
Farmers are still larger holders. We thought we might see a little bit more movement here in January, but a lot of farmers have taken out extended loans at the banks. They put corn on basis contracts, which they're able to get anywhere from 65 to 75% of the value of the corn as basically a loan up front. So they're doing whatever they can not to sell corn at these lower prices. And so as a result, we've seen basis levels pick up here in the last week to 10 days. The trade thought that farm corn would move, and it hasn't. So now basis levels are starting to pick up to try to encourage some farm movement.
How about for the soybeans?
The soybeans have had a little bit more of a sell-off, and we haven't seen the rally there. Again, farmers want $9. Nearby futures are $8.80. So if we could see a 20-cent rally in beans, we might see some farm movement in beans. But without that, the farmers seem perfectly content to hold on and wait for higher prices, or until more time, you know, slips off the calendar, and then they might be more willing to sell. But they're probably a little bit heavier sold on beans percentage-wise than they are on corn, so they probably don't feel like they need to make a sale on beans because they feel like they're far enough sold ahead on beans.
Thanks so much for being with us today. I do appreciate that.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson, of course, is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County.
Support comes from Country Financial, now through March hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois. Topics include updates to both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill. And at most locations, how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
It's National Irish Coffee Day. It's also Dinner Party Out Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1787, in Shays' Rebellion, a group of poor farmers protesting high taxes marched into Springfield, Massachusetts to seize the federal arsenal. Shays' rebellion caused George Washington to emerge from retirement to advocate a stronger national government. In 1799, the Lycum Spooner of Vermont patented a gravity-feed seed planting machine, but it was not until 1840 that a truly practical seed planting machine was developed when Joseph Gibbons received a patent for a machine that combined a grain drill with cavities to deliver the seed and a device to regulate the volume. In 1915, Alexander Graham Bell inaugurated U.S. transcontinental telephone service, speaking from New York to Thomas Watson in San Francisco. By the way, the phone line used 2,500 tons of copper wire and 130,000 telephone poles. In 1945, Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters topped the charts with Don't Fence Me In. By the way, Crosby recorded the song without ever having previously heard of it or seen it. And in 1955, U.S. and Panama signed the Panama Canal Treaty. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. Since 1916, Farm Credit Illinois has been helping farm families succeed, providing farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing. Farm Credit Illinois joins in celebrating the rich history of Illinois agriculture.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. I'm Todd Gleason. On a Monday afternoon, let's check the weather forecast for the growing regions around the planet. Mark Russo of Risk Pulse joins us. Mark, I think we probably ought to start in South America. Let's begin with the Argentine crop. How are conditions there today?
Well, overall, crop conditions are in good shape across Argentina. We are watching one dry pocket that has evolved in recent weeks that has been located in eastern Argentina, extending into Uruguay, where rainfall has been less than 75% of normal. Even a few pockets receive less than 50% of normal. But this is after very good conditions or above normal rainfall that we saw, you know, prior to that. So it doesn't look like there's going to be some opportunities for rain in that dry pocket over the next few weeks. They don't look great. It looks like the higher totals or the stronger storms look to develop just north and west of that dry pocket, but nonetheless, they will have opportunities. Likely will not fully eliminate the dry pocket, but looks like it will be reduced over time. And overall, that is really the only kind of blemish at this time across South America. Up north in areas of northern Brazil where there had been dryness back in December, well, that's been improved here in January, and no sign of that changing. In just this dry pocket in eastern Argentina, Uruguay, that's only the minor item that has developed here in recent weeks. And overall, we do not see this as a major problem at the present time.
Have you been thinking about their Safrina corn crop very much and whether or not their late planting season will cause them coupled, I guess, with maybe the El Nino and its abatement, will cause them to put in a crop that may not get enough rainfall if things dry out quickly?
Well, at least for the present time, as we look out through the first half of February or so, no indication of any significant dry downs across that region. So, you know, from a long-term subsoil moisture standpoint, certainly it's on the lower end. However, again, their actual totals are very high at this time of year, and with even near normal rainfall, let's say that happens all the way through the end of February, then they should have ample soil moisture here as you begin to wind down the rainy season. So it's too early for any kind of concern there, but what would be the concern and the item to watch is if we go through later in February and then into March and things quickly dry out. And there's no indication of that right now.
Last week, the National Weather Service told us that February should be warmer than average for the Midwest, probably above average for the Midwest, and I think drier too. What do you see for the beginning, the next couple of months, 60 days for our part of the world, and we have maybe 40 seconds or so.
Yeah, well, we're seeing certainly more variability in temperatures now versus compared to back in December and November, which, well, December was record warm here. And with the upcoming pattern, certainly February is going to start off with a warmer bias, and we feel overall February will be a warmer bias. Probably in March, we expect more variability here. That is the one month out of all of our months here that at least has a higher odds of being colder than normal. So that's the one thing to watch going forward.
Thanks so much, Mark. Mark Russo, of course, is with Wrist Pulse. I'm Todd Gleason.